You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Welcome, everybody, and happy... Jeez, is it just Tuesday? Tuesday afternoon. Welcome, welcome one and all. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Well, that beautiful chuckle and laugh that you heard is none other than former U.S. Attorney James Santel. He's going to be joining me for the first hour of the show. We're going to talk about the fact that the Department of Justice, and I would argue nearly every federal agency, no longer work for the American people.
Do not.
That the interest, right, of the American people have been subsumed very explicitly by whatever Donald Trump's interest is. Louis XIV, famously, though it's not, no historian's ever been able to document that he actually said this, used to say, en français, l'État, c'est moi. It means I am the state. That we have lost any distinction between Donald Trump, the individual, the politician with personal, political power and financial interests, any distinction between that individual and the interests of the U.S. citizen, of Americans writ large. We're going to talk about that in detail with Jim and each and every one of you, including what looks like a decision from the Supreme Court shadow docket yesterday that will decimate, perhaps permanently, the independence of federal agencies, even though Congress mandated that. Not all federal agencies, certain of them, we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about the fact that when it comes to the Department of Justice, you either have to, you know, get busy suing Donald Trump's personal political enemies, or you will be out of a job. That's gone down. And on the flip side of the coin, you know, there's a little saying that I've heard from the younger generation: champagne for my real friends and real pain for my sham friends. That is Donald Trump's DOJ. So real pain for his sham friends, those U.S. attorneys that won't do his bidding to investigate and prosecute his political enemies, but champagne for his real friends like Tom Homan, literally getting a bag of money. Apparently there's footage or audio of this, but the investigation is being shut down. I don't know. We're going to talk about all of that, but let's get to some breaking news before we dive into all that substance this afternoon. Congressional Representative Tom Tiffany, well, it's official. He is in the gubernatorial race for the state mansion here in the state of Wisconsin in 2026. Good old Tom Tiffany. His lips have been firmly attached to Donald Trump's butt. Well, but for... I don't know, since 2016-ish, which makes what went down in the Oval Office yesterday a wee bit uncomfortable for Mr. Tiffany. Republican sources have told the Journal Sentinel that despite Tom showing up to bend the knee and kiss the ring of our would-be tin pot dictator, Trump declined to endorse Tiffany's run for governor. Why? Why, you may ask? Despite all of Tom Tiffany's groveling supplication and basically failure to fulfill his constitutional oath of office to actually be a check on this president, why did Donald Trump refuse to endorse him? Because Donald Trump's just worried about Donald Trump, of course. And in Tom Tiffany's run for the governor's office, he'll have to vacate the 7th District congressional seat, and that's all that Donald Trump actually cares about, is trying to, by hook or crook, maintain control of the House of Representatives. So that's going on. We're searching around for some of Representative Tiffany's sounds of his affection for our current president. I'm sure we'll find them, if not today, going forward into the future. Donald Trump today also, if you haven't been aware of this, we have a government shutdown looming.
Yes.
And as part of that shutdown discussion, Democrats on the Hill have basically put a line in the sand about restoring funding to ensure that every American who is working and looking for work can nonetheless access health care through Medicaid, Medicare, also the ACA, and the subsidies that used to be there to ensure that health care remained affordable for a lot of folks that work on farms and in small businesses, all these kinds of folks. You know people who rely on both Medicaid, Medicare, and as well as the ACA exchanges to get insurance. We have been talking about the fact that that is about to go kaboom on November 1st when the exchanges open up. And you're going to see more pain, frankly, more sickness, more death coming in 2026 because of the fact that Republicans find it more important to give billionaires and folks with their names on university buildings and endowments for libraries and that fly around on private jets, more important to give those people tax breaks than it is to ensure that every American, again, that are working folks,
basic
disabled folks,
right, Maggie?
Right, can get basic health care. Today, Donald Trump is saying in a Truth Social post that he will refuse to meet with Democrats to discuss their demands to try to restore funding so that American citizens can access basic health care, afford bankruptcies, and afford making the premiums for all of us that have private insurance through our private sector employers, make sure that our premiums don't explode because people are forced to receive only emergency health care through emergency departments, which drives up premiums and deductibles for everybody else that obtains insurance through their employers. So mark this moment. The government shutdown may happen because Donald Trump refuses to talk to Democrats about the very real catastrophe that will befall millions of Americans and tens of thousands of Wisconsinites because of the big, brutal bills, tax cuts for billionaires and people that don't need them, for whom those tax cuts will be nothing more than a rounding error. If you or someone you know cannot find themselves unable to access or afford insurance in the near term, there's only one man to blame, and his name is Donald Trump. Also, in breaking news, we've been talking about the Jimmy Kimmel return. That's going to be this evening on ABC. I just wanted to point this out. Sinclair Broadcasting, this very conservative, biased ABC affiliate ownership group alongside Tegna and Nexstar, put out a statement earlier today. This was about 30, 45 minutes ago, something in that ballpark, saying, beginning Tuesday night, tonight, Sinclair will be preempting Jimmy Kimmel Live across our ABC affiliate stations and are replacing it with, quote, news program. News programming. I'm sure that'll be totally unbiased. This is an interesting post on X, given that back in 2020, Sinclair posted this. We support, quote, free speech in a marketplace of ideas and viewpoints, even if incredibly controversial, end quote. I guess they meant that in 2020, but they don't mean it now. Fascinating how quickly they flip-flop. And this, Wisconsin's own Rojo, as in Rojo has got to go, Wisconsin needs a lot less Ron Johnson, had some more stupid things to say about public health, reminiscent of the stupid things that he had to say about COVID-19. But let's not forget our president's stupidity when he made the announcement yesterday discouraging the use of Tylenol by pregnant women, despite the lack of any reliable peer-reviewed studies to support the allegations that that use by pregnant women may lead to autism. Let's see the president not even be able to pronounce acetaminophen.
It's not that difficult a word, right?
No.
Effective immediately, the FDA will be notifying physicians that the use of acetaminophen. Is that okay?
Which is you don't know, no. Sir? No, you don't know. By the way, folks, acetaminophen, spelled acetaminophen, literally acetaminophen. It's about as phonetic of a spelling of a maybe kind of complicated pharmaceutical term that everyone sees on the bottles of generic Tylenol that everyone has bought for every year of their life as an adult on this planet. Anyways.
And it is one of those words, Maggie, that's in the public domain. We talk about that. It's one of those few pharmaceutical words that people know about when they're in CVS or Walgreens. They talk about that, right? One of the few. President doesn't know about it. And as you said, much more dangerous is this notion that we've got the medical doctor in chief now pontificating about this.
That knows nothing. Not to be outdone by our president's stupidity, here's Ron Johnson doubling down on his own stupidity. Cut six.
Mouthwash. Let me just give you some facts. So we've all heard of VAERS, the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System. Well, the FDA has VAERS, the FDA Adverse Event Reporting System. So in 56 years of tracking Tylenol, there have been 39,540 deaths reported to FAERS. That's 706 per year. For ivermectin, you remember the one that they said was so dangerous? In 29 years reporting, 493 deaths, 17 a year. And of course, for the COVID injection, in over just 5 years, 38,742 deaths associated with the COVID injection. That's over 8,000 per year. Now, those are just the facts. I know VAERS and FAERS, it doesn't prove causation, but it should be causing physicians and federal health officials to ask the questions. And God bless President Trump and RFK Jr. for asking the questions and starting to use their positions, their platform, to give parents informed consent.
Okay, I can barely even contain my seething, raging anger. Ron Johnson, I guess, is really this stupid, okay? The words were taken right out of my mouth by Dean Baker, the senior economist at the Center for Economic and Policy Research, when he said, can Ron Johnson really be this stupid? Hundreds of millions of people take Tylenol every year. How many people in this country take ivermectin, which is for horses? Very few. It's as if, and this is the analogist used by this economist, you know, very few people who die from Russian roulette. In the Ron Johnson world, that means Russian roulette is very safe. Again, comparing on absolute value numbers, the number of reported incidents related to Tylenol use as compared to ivermectin is a complete data irrelevancy. It is the ratio over the hundreds of millions that use Tylenol to the very relatively infinitesimally small number of bad events that accrue from that. Asking questions is now the code language for I embrace junk science and throw logic and statistics out of the window. Rojo got to go, but Jim Santel is here to stay. We dig into this week's big legal news. You're not going to want to miss any bit of it because independent federal agencies help protect you and your family's health. I'll be right back with Jim and each and every one of us here at Civic Media on the other side. Stay with us.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back. You know, if it was up to RFK, Rojo, and the brain trust that is Donald Trump, we'd all be pumping ivermectin, drinking bleach, and using sunlight to cure that COVID. It's too much. It's too much. Speaking of what is permitting this stupidity to replace the wisdom of actual medical science, actual good data analysis, all of the things that many of us learned about, you know, like the scientific method back in grade school, middle school.
People who know what they're talking about, right, Maggie? The experts out there, right?
Actual subject matter experts. Mm-hmm. all of that nonsense, though I make fun of it, is indicative of a through-the-looking-glass moment that we are now in this country. Jim Santel, the former U.S. attorney for the Eastern District of Wisconsin, also host of Amicus, a law review on Saturdays across this network from 9 to 11, is with us to help us understand this. But I'm just going to give you all the punchline now, and then we're going to fill in how we got here. Here is the bottom line. Through the Supreme Court's shadow docket yesterday, they have basically ruled that Donald Trump can fire for any reason, no reason, simply to stock so-called independent federal agencies with people that are personally loyal to Donald Trump. By so doing, the Supreme Court has set the stage for basically ensuring that every federal agency, including those about which Congress specifically legislated and required their independence, will no longer be independent. Every federal agency, apparently according to the Supreme Court shadow docket yesterday, is going to now turn into a political arm of the White House. And to be clear here, ladies and gentlemen, this is incredibly bad for small businesses. This is bad for regular people who can't pay millions of dollars to buy their own islands and filter their own air and water. It's bad for all of us, regular people, if a president can use federal agencies that are supposed to be serving the U.S. citizen and resident and turn them instead into political propaganda machines to support that president. If this appears or sounds shocking to you, I assure you, my friends, this is not hyperbole. This is the reality under the kangaroo court that is today's U.S. Supreme Court.
It's doing nothing short of changing the way that government works, Maggie, right? Right?
And in nearly every single case. So set this up for the listeners, Jim. What is this case? And it is, in fact, one of many, many cases relating to Donald Trump's attempted firing of folks without cause that have come before the court, meaning the Supreme Court. And virtually all of those have been held by this Supreme Court on its shadow docket without analysis, without authoring an opinion.
Without argument, without briefs.
Without argument, without briefs to support the president's ability to fire people, even though Congress required the president to have cause to fire these people. That's what's, to flesh this out for people. How did we get to this moment?
Absolutely. And that point cannot be overstated. As you said, Maggie, Congress establishes these independent agencies. Yes, this is kind of wonky. There are people who sit around the cabinet table in the White House, and then there are independent agencies that work on your behalf separate and apart from the executive. And those include things like the National Labor Relations Board, unions, labor in America, the Merit Systems Protection Board, very wonky again, that protects civil servants in America. We've got the Consumer Product Safety Commission, and this, of course, is the Federal Trade Commission, right? The agency that enforces consumer protection issues, antitrust laws, those kinds of things. Way back in the springtime, Donald Trump decides he's going to fire a couple of people. One of them is named Rebecca Kelly Slaughter, and her name is now attached to this shadow docket case. And he says, I've got the capacity to do it, the authority to do it. Turns out that, of course, she pushes back on this, and you've got the lower courts saying, no, 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 you cannot do that. That's said both by a district court and an appeals court, and goes up to the Supreme Court on the emergency docket. We got to have emergency action on this issue, Supreme Court. And as you said yesterday, the Supreme Court, contrary to the very commission by which the FTC is put together, contrary to the way in which Ms. Slaughter works as one of the commissioners there, one of five, says, go ahead and do just that. You can do just that, Mr. President. And as you say, it is significant for the FTC, hugely important for all Americans, but it has this consequence well beyond. It opens up this door to all these federal agencies not subject to presidential oversight and firing, and opens the possibility that they all could, again, be brought under this unitary executive theory. The president is responsible to and for everything and changes the way that government works. It is horrifying. And again, it is done on the shadow docket. We've got no explanation. We do have, of course, we've got the dissent on this. And that is, of course, written by Elena Kagan. And she goes at it. And she says, what are you doing once again? If there's something, Maggie, if I can commend to your listeners, read the 2 or 3 page dissent from Elena Kagan. She is upset beyond words and goes on to say, of course, that the kind of thing that you're doing here, not only unconstitutional and illegal. She says, although the majority of justices are raring, her word, to overturn a precedent, which also guides this, for now it remains in effect.
Truly, truly shocking. We're going to come back to this topic. We are going to show you how Donald Trump effectively believes and has now the agreement of the Supreme Court to make everything that is happening in the federal government in service of his political, financial, and power ambitions. It ain't supposed to be this way. Don't go anywhere. We continue to dig in. Tom Homan, the bag man, allegedly, but no investigation for him. We discuss all of it and so much more right here next on the Civic Media Radio Network. Go back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Join our conversation this hour. I'm joined by former U.S. Attorney for the Eastern District of Wisconsin, James Santel. And you all are welcome to join in this discussion, 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. And you're not going to want to go anywhere at the top of the 5 o'clock hour. We'll have some more news for you. We'll have some of that Tom Tiffany sounds. We've got a couple that I'm going to play for you in just a moment here. And we're going to have State Senator Kel DeRoy's candidate for the Wisconsin governor's office joining us, as well as the word to win in the 5 o'clock hour for Civic Media's multi-state text to win green and gold contest. So you're not going to want to go anywhere all afternoon. Jim, let's get back to this topic. One of my favorite texters, our good friends, Mark from Sussex, has been texting me. He's a conservative gentleman. He's been texting me about this decision from the Supreme Court, saying, thank you, Supreme Court, for doing this. And here is the thing. And I want to talk about a couple of other elements that make this shadow docket ruling yesterday quite shocking. When we lose the independence of federal agencies, let's think about what the agency's functions are, right? If you're talking about the Securities and Exchange Commission, if you're talking about the Federal Trade Commission, if you're talking about the FCC, if you're talking about the National Labor Relations Board, all of these organizations, I should say agencies, basically are there, and I'm going to make a sweepingly broad and very oversimplified statement here, but they are there to protect the little guy from those that have immense wealth and power. Stay with me here, folks. I'll just take the Federal Reserve. They're trying to balance inflation and unemployment. That is their congressional mandate. Why? It's not because billionaires are going to end up in breadlines. It's because you will. That's why it's important for the Federal Reserve to remain independent. If you own a small business and inflation explodes, guess what? Walmart isn't closing. Your small business is. The same goes with stagflation. If we have the combination of burgeoning, growing unemployment and growing inflation, I can go on and on. The Securities and Exchange Commission, they're not actually worried about if Jeff Bezos loses some money because somebody lies in a 10-K filed with the SEC. The SEC's really worried about if you and your 401k are lied to and suffer the adverse financial implications of material misrepresentations in the publicly filed documents required by the SEC by publicly traded corporations. The EPA isn't worried about whether or not Elon Musk has clean air and water to drink, nor is the FDA worried about whether George Soros or Peter Thiel have safe meat and vegetables to eat. They're worried about you. And so if you rob all of these agencies of their independence, if you drive out all of the scientists that do objective research, all of the good data analysts, it's not the Peter Thiels or the George Soroses or the Elon Musks or the Donald Trumps that will suffer. It is you. And whether you voted for him and think he's the second coming of Jesus Christ or not, the consequences for regular Americans are not avoidable here. So with that, Jim, I just wanted to return and talk a little bit about some of these very specific elements of this shadow docket decision that I think make it so, so shocking. I'm going to begin with this. These requests for intervention to stay lower court's orders that go up to the Supreme Court in the shadow docket, which require the Supreme Court to effectively render a decision that may alter the status of the parties in that case and have wide-reaching implications. First of all, it's important for people to know that the Supreme Court reaches those decisions without full argument or briefing by the parties.
Which most often takes months, right, Maggie?
Months.
We're a couple of weeks from now, we're going to have a new term of the Supreme Court. You're going to see arguments for hours on end. That follows briefs being written, and they're going to be thinking about these decisions for a long period of time. None of that here. Within days after the Solicitor General, a guy named John Sauer, goes to the Supreme Court and says, emergency, emergency. Overturn what lower courts, typically two lower courts, a district court and appellate court, have done. Do it right now. And within hours, days later, the Supreme Court, without more than a mention of what the case may be about, as is the case yesterday, says, sure, we're going to give the president what he wants to have here, and changes the dynamic, as you said, of these agencies for a long period of time, if not indefinitely. That's the problem with all of this.
And yesterday, one of the things that's so interesting to consider, the extraordinariness of what the Supreme Court is doing, not only did the Supreme Court throw out 90 years of precedent, this is this case, you'll hear Wonks talk about it, it's Humphrey's executor. You don't need to remember the name of the case, but the case stood for the principle that when Congress says that you have to have cause to fire people from certain positions, they actually meant it, and that's what the balance of powers and co-equal branches of government mean.
And Humphrey's executor, right? Was actually about the Federal Trade Commission. We're not
about
another agency.
Very agency.
It was this
very
agency, the same kind of thing 90 years ago. It's been precedent ever since that time. And again, Elena Kagan says, what are we doing here? You're basically acting illegally, is what she says in her dissent, by not only going against that precedent, but doing something that Congress once again prohibited as a part of its commission of the FTC.
But here are these, and here's what is, the Supreme Court is the activist court, the conservative wing of the Supreme Court, is now the activist court that conservatives derided for 25 years. Here's why. Generally speaking, stays that come up to the Supreme Court on the shadow docket are generally brought by the party where the status quo is changing, okay? The status quo here is that cause is required and the person stays in the job. The Supreme Court in this and all of the other cases where Donald Trump flouted Congress's authority and the constitutional balance of powers and decided to fire someone without cause, all of these cases where the Supreme Court greenlights that, removes an acting commissioner or other federal agency official without that cause. So it's not only going against precedent, it's upsetting the status quo, which used to be verboten. Basically, it was not the purpose of the shadow docket, which dates back to death penalty cases. To wit, you stay the execution because the alternative would be that the person dies.
Right. You can't get that one wrong. You can't get that one wrong.
Right.
Right.
And here they're totally unconcerned with that. The second thing is that they have now granted certiorari before judgment was rendered on the merits in the lower court. So the typical order of business is trial court reviews. There's either jury verdict or decision rendered by the trial court. Then they appeal to the federal appeals court. The appeals court renders its judgment. Then that is finally appealed to the Supreme Court. Here, that entire process has been bypassed. So not only are they acting against 90 years of precedent, not only are they subverting the status quo, not only are they stripping Congress's authority away from it in contravention of the constitutional order established by our founding fathers, they're doing it on an expedited basis, which is completely unnecessary and unrequired here. It is truly, truly shocking.
And Maggie, and if I can also note that in the very, very skeletal statement coming from the Chief Justice who did this yesterday, he also identifies what the questions are that they're going to ask. And I think he's signaling very clearly, horrifically, what is on the minds of the Supreme Court. He says the questions we're going to talk about when we review this, not only Humphrey's executor, but the entire issue is whether the removal protections for members of the Federal Trade Commission violate the separation of powers. And oh, by the way, whether a federal court can prevent a person's removal from public office through relief, equity, or law, those are questions that are loaded. And they are plainly envisioning not a balanced review of this whenever this comes up, but we are basically anticipating overturning, again, 90 years of precedent, and more importantly, as you have said so compellingly, changing the way that government works, changing the very thing that not just the FTC does, but the ways in which our Constitution contemplates separation of powers cannot be overstated.
And here's what Kagan says on this. The president may thereby extinguish the agency's bipartisanship and independence, quote unquote. And she concludes, our emergency docket, the shadow docket, should never be used, as it has been this year, to permit what our own Supreme Court precedent bars. She is saying the very points that Jim and I just discussed with each and every one of you. Jim, we got one of our favorite conservatives on the line. I'm sure vigorously dissents, to use the language of the Supreme Court. Welcome, CJ. Say hi to Jim. What you got for us?
Hey, CJ.
Hi, Mr. Cannoli and Maggie. I'm representing Donald defending that. So, because I serve at the pleasure of the president. I want to say, you know, you didn't have a problem when the Biden administration went back three times with student debt.
Okay, hang on, CJ. I'll let you finish. But the difference here, okay, is that each time the Biden administration attempted a different loan forgiveness plan, it was on different legal bases. It did not contravene or contradict, either directly or indirectly, any prior precedent of the Supreme Court. Please continue, my friend.
Well, I think it comes down to a lot of merit and performance, because the Bureau of Labor and Statistics made a 911,000 job creation error that weren't created and has something to do with performance. But did you see the president kicking ass at the UN today? Wow.
So CJ, we're talking about the Supreme Court, CJ, and BLS employment numbers are always revised since Donald Trump replaced the head. Excuse me. I am responding to what your comments were, and before you started to divert into it, not what we're talking about. The BLS guy that Donald Trump handpicked after firing the last head of statistics at the BLS actually produced jobs numbers that were worse, much, much worse than what the woman he fired produced. So that's off topic. Here's the difference here, CJ. You talked about I serve at the pleasure of the president. That's for cabinet officials and other minor appointees. That's not what we're talking about here. This is under completely different statutory authority that was Congress's to make. And to be clear here, CJ, in this very case, in the Slaughter case, the government admits that the president has not offered any cause basis for the termination, and that he should be able to do that despite the fact that Congress required the firing to be for cause. That's the problem here.
Well, can I say your party said Secretary Mayorkas did a great job.
Again, off point and backwards looking, we're looking at this administration. Stay tuned, folks. We talk about the Bagman Homan on the other side. You're listening to me, Jim, and CJ sometimes here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. We got former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel with us. He hosts Amicus every Saturday morning from 9 to 11. You got questions. Jim's got answers. Every week is just chock full of legal news. Some of it technical. We hope to always break it down. But if I don't have time to get to all the details, you know Jim well on the weekends. Check it out. I always put an earbud in and give it a listen while I'm doing my weekend chores. And coming up next, do not forget, we got State Senator Kelda Royce. She's now a gubernatorial candidate here in Wisconsin for 2026. We'll talk to Kelda. Did you know she and I went to law school together? That'll be a fun chit chat. And of course, we've got our text to win. Go for the green and gold multi-state contest coming up. I'm going to drop the word of the hour in our next segment. I'm also going to hold our discussion of the Bagman Homan for 5:30. I'm going to get into that in greater detail at that point. But I wanted to talk, Jim, with you about what has gone on in basically the last 5 days, including the weekend, in the Eastern District of Virginia. There was a U.S. attorney there that I believe was Donald Trump's pick. He basically fired him. Tell us what went down and why this is so deeply concerning.
Right. This is the former U.S. attorney now. His name is Eric Siebert. He was not only the president's pick, but also had some very strong ties to the administration. A fellow named Emile Beauvais, who's now on the Third Circuit, is a close friend of hers. This fellow is not on the fringes. He is right in the middle of the Republican Party, and there's nothing wrong with that. He is assigned, presumably by main justice, maybe by the deputy attorney general, maybe the attorney general herself, wants to look at two people who are indeed on the president's adversary list, we'll call it that. One of them is Letitia James. Of course, she's the New York Attorney General, got that huge judgment against him. And also the former FBI director, James Comey. Lots and lots of history between those two. And again, as the chief federal law enforcement officer for the Eastern District of Virginia, rather, right across the Potomac from Washington, D.C., what he does is he says, okay, we'll investigate these things. He comes back, and late last week, he says, you know what? We have done a thorough investigation. There's no there. There's nothing for us to indict here. No mortgage fraud, no other things that are untoward or illegal. And for that reason, we need to close the case, which is what the responsibility of a U.S. attorney is when they come to an end and they determine that the investigation does not show any criminal conduct. Donald Trump says, nope, that's not good. And again, depending upon who you believe, either Eric Siebert leaves, he's fired, doesn't matter, but he is out. And the president then says, okay, I'm going to appoint now. I've named a new person. Her name is Lindsay Halligan. She's been inside the Trump sphere, if you will, for a long period of time. For what it's worth, she handled insurance matters way back in Florida. President announced that she is now going to be the new U.S. attorney in Eastern Virginia. And presumably now she's going to walk in when she is confirmed, which she presumably will be, and presented with the same files that Mr. Siebert was presented with. The question will be, all right, Lindsay, what are you going to do with those files? To try to present those to the grand jury and get an indictment based upon no evidence? What is that about? What is that going to look like? The president describes her as a tough prosecutor, Maggie. She's never prosecuted a case in her life, and I think she's got some education coming in when she enters that office there and finds, in fact, you've got civil servants who are saying, we are not, like the former U.S. attorney, we are not going to go. We are not going to go in front of a grand jury and present something, offer an indictment where there's no basis for it. And indeed, maybe, just maybe, as we've seen more and more, maybe the grand jury, if somehow that happens on some trumped up charges here, if the grand jury itself says, you know what, There's no there. We're not going to indict. This is a fascinating story. It's a fascinating problem also because it underscores the complete breakdown of the wall between the White House and the Department of Justice. No president should be involved in this kind of thing. And it undermines the integrity of the work of the Department of Justice.
Yeah, it just simply does not exist anymore. Folks, let me summarize at a real high level what Jim just said. The Trump handpicked former U.S. attorney for the Eastern District of Virginia, who is a MAGA regime loyalist, who is a favorite amongst conservative circles, investigated Donald Trump's political enemies, including Adam Schiff, Letitia James, and others. He concluded that he could not proceed with a prosecution. Donald Trump pushed him out or fired him, and has now replaced him with a woman who has never prosecuted a single crime in her entire life, but is apparently more faithful and dutiful to the president's political prosecution goals than the prior guy was. And keep in mind, and I'm going to get to Homan at 5:30, they're doing this in Virginia while they're stopping the investigation of Tom Homan, who is allegedly caught either on videotape or audio tape in a sting with FBI agents taking a bag full of $50,000 cash money dollars to funnel contracts to made-up companies that these FBI agents created. In other words, it's a bribe. That investigation gets closed. But the investigation by a Trump MAGA regime loyalist, extremely conservative lawyer that found no means, no basis to proceed, that guy gets fired and replaced with the insurance lawyer who's never prosecuted a single case in her entire life. I ask you, does this sound like the weaponization of the DOJ to prosecute political enemies? It sure does, folks. If it quacks, has feathers, and walks like a duck, guess what? It's a duck. Jim, it is always such a pleasure. Thank you for being here.
Honored to be
with
you as always, my friend.
I'll be listening on Saturday. We'll have Jim back real soon. Folks, stay tuned. I've got State Senator Calderoy is discussing her run to be Wisconsin's next governor. That's coming up at 5 o'clock at the top of the hour, right here on the Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. Stay with us.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.